All right, we are back to our kings of Israel and Judah, and we are on to Ahaziah, and Jehoram of Israel. So before you write a single note on your page, if you have your sheet, make sure you're on the right side. We need to be on the northern kingdom side, Israel, northern kingdom, because there's an Ahaziah and a Jehoram on both sides. And I'm going to explain some of that here today. There's a reason for that they're kind of all blended together. But make sure before you put any notes on there, you're on the northern kingdom, Israel side. So you've had Ahab, and then we're talking about Ahab's sons here. You may remember last time when we were looking at Jehoshaphat, we talked about how he blended the royal families of the north and the south. Do you remember that? Jehoshaphat married his son off to Ahab's daughter. And this is where it gets complicated, and this is where I need to remind you that when we started this series, I said, listen, you may think that you're not a person who gets the details down, but I'm telling you, there's something in life that you care enough about that you know the details of it. So maybe it's Major League Baseball, or maybe it's the characters in a TV show, or maybe it's the characters in a series of novels. But this is one of those times when you got to try to plug that same energy that you can plug into those other things that you love into knowing this, how this all fits together. And I'm going to try to help you with that, though, here by doing a little family tree stuff on the board here to try to get straight who's Ahaziah and who's Joram, who's the other Ahaziah and who's the other Joram. We have Judah on this side, and we have Israel over here. Okay? And last week we were looking at Jehoshaphat, king of Judah. Okay, he was king over here. At the same time, you had Ahab, who was married to Jezebel, right? Was Jezebel, hey kids, was Jezebel a good queen or a bad queen? Bad, that's right, right? All kinds of, and was Ahab a good king or a bad king? Bad, right? Okay, now, Ahab and Jezebel have three kids that we're going to talk about. They had lots more. We're going to talk about three of them, though. They had a daughter whose name was Athaliah. Another name that should make you shudder. Athaliah. Okay? They also had, I'm going to make sure I get this right. I'm going to put it on the board here. They also had a son named Ahaziah, presumably their oldest son, because he became king first. And they had another son named Jehoram, or another version of that name is Joram. And it's both ways in scriptures. You kind of have to keep track of both of those names. Now, Jehoshaphat had a son. We don't know what his wife's name was, I don't think. But he had a son whose name was, who was also Jehoram, or Joram. And he as well had his name spelled both ways. And Jehoshaphat's bright idea to make peace with Israel was to marry his son Joram to Athaliah. That's where you get the two families being blended together. Ahab and Jezebel's daughter Athaliah married to Jehoshaphat's son Jehoram or Joram. And from that marriage, then, you have another son, you have another person named Ahaziah. All clear as mud? Right, we got this all? Okay? Now, these ones are kings of Judah. Right? You have Jehoshaphat and then Jehoram or Joram, and then you have Ahaziah. These ones, Ahaziah his son, and then his brother, Jehoram or Joram, are kings of Israel. So these two are the two we're looking at today. But it's all messed up together. It's all connected, and we're going to be doing these guys after this. We're going to be doing these guys next time, I think. But just take a moment to think about the situation we've got going on here. A couple of interesting things to know. Ahab and Jezebel, bad news, right? Now look at the names of their sons. Do you know what that IAH at the end of a name represents? Not quite. Anytime you have an IAH or a JAH at the end of a name, it's the name of the Lord. It's Yahweh. So, Athaliah and Ahaziah. And then in this name, it's at the beginning. Jehoram, the Yah part, is also the name of the Lord. Yahweh. Yah. So here you have Ahab and Jezebel. Bad news. Baal worshippers, all the rest of that, with three kids with the name of the Lord in. Which gives you a little bit of a sense of the syncretism and the blending that was going on. Around this time, they've uncovered a carving that says Yahweh and his Asherah. And it's a picture of supposedly the Lord with a female goddess. So there's a picture of the blending that's going on here, of taking the idea of the worshiping the Lord and blending it with something else and turning it into something else that's not a true religion. Not a true religion, certainly. But then you've got these similar... The other thing to note is we don't know exactly how the years line up and who was born when and who could have been named after whom. But you can see here, you've got these two families that are getting along when they really shouldn't be, because Jehoshaphat should have nothing to do with them. And you've got two of the... You've got the same name of two of the princes of... Prince of Israel and Prince of Judah. And then with this family getting going here, you can imagine that Ahaziah was named after Uncle Ahaziah, Athaliah's brother, his mother's brother. And so you've got this... The reason that these names are all the same is because they're... The families are all tangled up with each other. And it's not good news for Judah. That's all part of the picture here. So all you have to do is just get this perfectly straight, keep it straight, and you'll understand the Bible. So, but let's... This is the territory we're going to be in here this week and next week, is this mess of a family, a couple of families, all tangled up with each other. And as I said, this week we're going to be looking at these two guys over here. Ahab and Jezebel's oldest son, who was king first, and then their other son, Jehoram or Joram, who became king after him. Okay, so let's look at Ahaziah first here, this guy here. He only reigned for a little while. He reigned from around 853 to 852 BC. We're told he reigned for 2 years. 1 Kings chapter 22. So if you turn to the end of 1 Kings, the beginning of 2 Kings, if you want to have your Bibles open, that's where we're going to be starting out. 1 Kings 22, it tells us that he reigned 2 years over Israel. But then it's only in 2 Kings chapter 1 that we really get into much information about him. He's really not mentioned much elsewhere. He does show up in 2 Chronicles 20 briefly. There's not nearly as much about him there. But Ahaziah was a short-lived king, and he was an evil king. It says he walked in the ways of his father and mother. He also walked in the ways of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. What was that? Does anybody remember? What did Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, do? They always say, and he walked in the ways of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat.
Didn't he set up the altars?
Yep, he set up worship places, and what did he set up? Not just altars. What genius idea from Mount Sinai did he decide to repeat? Golden calves. So Jeroboam set up golden calves for Israel to worship, saying this is worshiping the Lord, but it's in a way that they've invented, that he invented. And so every king after him that says he walked in the ways of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that's what it's talking about. So we got to keep that straight. So he walked in the ways of his parents, all the Baal worship, all that terrible stuff. And he also walked in the ways of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. It says he served Baal and provoked the Lord to anger. And really, there's only one incident. Well, I guess we do know he worked on a fruitless shipping project with Jehoshaphat. The ships got wrecked. We talk about that one other time. But there's really only one major incident in Ahaziah's life, and that was his death that we're told about. He only reigned for a little while. It says that he fell through the lattice in his upper room. He had just an accident around the home and was badly injured. And 2 Kings chapter 1 tells us that when he was injured, instead of going to Elijah the prophet, he sent his people off to inquire of Baal-zebub, or Beelzebub is where that name Beelzebub comes from, this passage. Baal of Zebub, or which is also where we get the phrase Lord of the Flies. Baal-zebub means Lord of the Flies, and so the book is named after this as well. So that's where that all comes from, in 2 Kings chapter 1. But his idea was, I'm not going to consult the Lord. I'm going to send my servants way out of Israel to Ekron, which is one of the Philistine cities, to consult with the Philistine God about my injury, if I'm going to get better. So, not a good thing. Shouldn't have been going there for help. But Elijah meets those servants on the way. God told him, go up and meet these messengers. Elijah tells them, is it because there is no God in Israel that you're going to inquire of Baal-zebub, the god of Ekron? Now, therefore, thus says the Lord, you shall not come down from the bed to which you've gone up, but you shall surely die. And Elijah gave him that message, and they brought it back to Ahaziah. And we won't go into all the details of that story, but Ahaziah is so upset with Elijah, he sends a captain with 50 men to go kill Elijah or bring him back, and they are consumed with fire from heaven. And Ahaziah, not getting the hint, sends another group of 50 men, and they're consumed with fire from heaven. And still not getting the hint, Ahaziah sends a third group of men, and at that point, the captain himself pleads with Elijah and says, "Everybody else has died who's come to you. Please don't kill us. Please don't do this to us." And Elijah spares him and goes down with him, but then tells the king the same message. "Listen, you're going to die. You shouldn't have consulted Baal-zebub." That's the end of the story. And that's the end of the story for Ahaziah. That's really all we get. He was an evil king. He went way out of his way to consult a god of another country when you had Elijah the prophet living in his time, and ended up dying very young, died without any children because he was young and didn't have any sons. So that's why when you have a son die who doesn't have any kids, it passes to the next son of Ahab. So that's why these are the same family. Normally it's been going one after the other, but Ahaziah didn't have any kids. So that's why we are, any boys at least, that's why we bump over to Jehoram or Joram. I'll just call him Jehoram from here on out, but he is also called Joram. So he's another son of Ahab. He ruled from around 852 to 841 BC. 2 Kings 3 verse 1 tells us he reigned for 12 years. And 2 Kings 3 is kind of where we're going to start. You can flip along with me in 2 Kings. All the references to him are in 2 Kings, briefly in chapter 1 and then chapter 3 and then in chapter 6 through 9. So we're going to look at a few, I guess it's really four battles or wars that he was involved in. We won't go into detail in them, but we'll go through a few of them here. The first that's important is the battle against Mesha of Moab. He was fighting against Mesha of Moab, and Mesha had been subjected by Omri and Ahab. So Jehoram's dad and grandpa had subjected Mesha of Moab. He comes into power, and Mesha says, "Hey, this is my chance. I'm going to rebel, and I don't want to be answering to the king of Israel anymore." And so he rebelled, and Jehoram had to go off and fight Moab. This is the incident where he brings Jehoshaphat along with him. And Jehoshaphat really shouldn't have been fighting alongside the king of Israel, but he went anyway. And this is the time where Jehoshaphat says, "We need to consult a prophet." And Jehoram says, "Okay, well, Elisha's here. We can talk to Elisha." And Elisha said to him, this is 2 Kings 3, 13 and 14, "What have I to do with you? Go to the prophets of your father and to the prophets of your mother." Who's he talking about there? The prophets of your father and the prophets of your mother. Baal, prophets of Baal, right? Remember all that with Ahab and Jezebel? Well, that's true. They all got killed by Elijah. Maybe it's a little bit of little tongue-in-cheek from Elisha. Go to your dead prophets. I didn't think about that. That's a good point. But then Jehoram says to him, "No, it is the Lord who has called these three kings to give them into the hand of Moab." And Elisha said, "As the Lord of hosts lives, before whom I stand, were it not that I had regard for Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would neither look at you nor see you." So this guy's bad news, his family's bad news. Elisha says, "I don't want anything to do with you, but because Jehoshaphat's here, I'll give you a prophecy." And he prophesied victory for them. This is a very interesting battle. I preached on this in August of 2018. If you go back on Sermon Audio, there's a sermon about lukewarm faith from the series on Elisha. I go into much more detail on this one particular battle. If you go back to that one, there's some really interesting stuff going on there. Elisha gives them victory, but then in the end, Jehoram goes and does this scorched earth policy towards Moab and just starts tearing the place up and burns everything and ends up not getting the final victory because he doesn't actually follow the Lord's law in how he's supposed to go about this war. So he's willing to follow Elisha's directions when it's convenient, but when it's not convenient, he's going to go ahead and break God's law. And that's a pattern we're going to start to see with this guy. So that's the first battle, is a battle against Moab, against Mesha. And then he has the other three that we're going to look at here. Other three battles have to do with Syria. And lots of fighting with the Syrians. And this is in the lifetime of Elisha. And you may know these stories better as stories about Elisha, because the king is actually not named in these ones. So this is 2 Kings chapter 6, if you flip over there. If you remember the incident where Elisha, the king of Syria, is upset that Elisha keeps ratting him out and where his army is located. And he sends an army to surround Dothan, where Elisha is. And Elisha's servant comes out and sees all these chariots, and he's terrified. And do you remember what Elisha tells or prays for this servant, or what happens next? Anybody remember this incident? There's an army surrounding Elisha. But there's an army surrounding that army, right? Elisha prays that his eyes would be opened, and the servant sees, no, there's an angelic army surrounding us here. There's chariots up in the sky, you know, all around. That God's, those who are with us are greater than those who are with them. And so, if you remember in that story, though, Elisha then leads the Syrian army into Samaria, which is the capital for this family. Which is weird to think about, because in that story, we don't see the king in a negative light. He listens, Jehoram listens to Elisha and like seeks his advice, and he doesn't kill all the Syrians right when he had the chance. And it's kind of a positive story about this guy. And we learn elsewhere that Jehoram actually got rid of the Baal worship in Samaria and in Israel. He got rid of worship of the Baals, but he continued in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. So he saw what happened to his parents. To his dad. His mom is still living at this point. We'll get back to her next time, or two times from now. But he saw his brother face off badly with the prophet of the Lord and go down hard. And he seems to have had some kind of an opportunistic, self-serving respect for the Lord, where he put out these false gods, and he had times where he would talk to Elisha and he would take Elisha's advice, but it was only when it was convenient for him. He didn't have a true faith in God, but God, he was restrained. His evil was restrained because he'd seen so much judgment on his father and his brother. So he's a bit of a complex character. The next story, again, that we don't necessarily associate with Jehoram is the story when Syria then besieged Samaria. And this is the case where the city's surrounded. They're so hungry. The king's walking on the wall. That's this guy. King's walking on the wall, and this woman comes to him to complain. One of the more grisly stories in the Bible. And says, this other woman and I agreed we were going to eat our children, and we cast lots and ate my child first, and then now she's hiding her child. Make her give me. Anyway, awful, awful story where there's cannibalism happening in the city because the city's besieged. But this is the king we're talking about. We think. He's not named there, but it's the right time period that this is most likely the king we're talking about. And if you remember in that story, and I'm saying you remember because I preached this a couple years ago, so you have some familiarity maybe. If you remember in that story, Jehoram actually had sackcloth under his royal robes. And he says, his message to Elisha is, why should I wait for the Lord any longer? And so he's sort of a complex character where he reacts badly to Elisha during that story, and he's not ultimately painted in a good light. But again, he has some kind of he has some kind of a respect for the Lord, even if it's only just to protect his own skin when it's convenient for him. Now, in that case, Elisha prophesied that they would have victory, and that's the story where the lepers all go out of the city. And they find the camp abandoned, and the lepers are having a great time, and then they say, hey, we should probably let some other people in on this. And they all come out of the city, and they have victory over the Syrians. It's a great story. So if any of these stories are sounding unfamiliar to you, go read these chapters here in 2 Kings 6 and 7. But again, that's an incident with Jehoram. And then the last battle that he was involved in was when he was fighting against Hazael of Syria. And this begins at the end of 2 Kings 8. And this gets this is the end of Jehoram's life. He was wounded in battle. So he went up to fight against Syria. He was wounded at Ramoth-Gilead. And then he left the battlefront to go recover back in Jezreel, back in one of his fortresses. So he's injured. He went back to a palace to recover. But it's while he's gone that Elisha goes and anoints Jehu, who's going to be the new king of Israel, at the battlefront. So there's this battlefront going on against the Syrians. Elisha and the king here has left the battlefront to go recover, and that's when Elisha comes along and anoints the new guy. And we'll look at that next time. Jehu then, when we look at him, we'll look at this in more detail. Jehu then comes back to where Jehoram is recovering. and has a face-off with him there at Naboth's vineyard. Now, this is where all the little details and all this lore that I'm talking about, you kind of have to keep track of to understand why this is all important. What did Ahab do? What did Jehoram's dad do to Naboth? Or he and Jezebel? To get this vineyard. Do you remember? Jezebel had Naboth killed so that Ahab could get this plot of land that he wanted. And at the time, Elijah prophesied against Ahab that his family would be destroyed, that the blood would be poured out on this land. And so here's Jehoram, who's recovering in the city there where Naboth's vineyard is. The new guy that Elisha has anointed comes back to challenge him. And where do they meet? Naboth's vineyard. And Jehoram basically says, "Hey, are you here to talk peaceably here?" And Jehu says, "No way." Jehoram tries to run for it, and Jehu shoots him in the back with an arrow as he flees away from him on his chariot. And that's the end of Jehoram. Then Jehu goes, again, we'll look at this when we look at him, goes on a rampage. And if I had listed all the other children of Ahab all over here, he wipes them all out. This is the end of the family of Ahab. Except for Athaliah, she'll come back. She's a problem. But this is, Jehu just comes in and wipes the slate clean. Just gets rid of this whole family that has been such a problem. In fulfillment of the Lord's prophecy against Ahab. And that's the end of Jehoram. He had been recovering there in Jezreel. Jehu comes to challenge him, and he ends up killed at the end of it. We'll get to this next time, but this guy gets killed at the same time by Jehu. It's all kind of a mess. But so it was a time of great upheaval. So if you want to put down enemies for Jehoram, Moab, and Syria would be the ones to put down there. And then I guess I didn't say for Ahaziah, the one enemy we know he was fighting against for his short reign, during his short reign, was Moab. So if you want to put down Moab for enemies for Ahaziah, that's what that is. Now, let me get the projector going here real quick. All right, I've mentioned this one before, but to get a little bit of the archaeological context here, this is the Misha Stela. So the Misha Stela is this piece of rock that King Misha of Moab had made. So if you remember, I talked about Misha is the one that was fighting against Jehoram and Jehoshaphat from Moab. And we actually have a stone that he made, and he calls himself Misha, king of Moab. And he talks about having been under the reign of Omri and Omri's son, and then how he rebelled against that family, and it all just lines up amazingly. And so it's just one of these really great examples where you have a bunch of different details confirmed in a piece of rock that we dug up somewhere that confirms what we have in Scripture. And so you can look into that a little more if you're interested. It's called the Misha Stela. It even mentions Chemosh, his god, which is mentioned in the story of Jehoshaphat and Jehoram fighting against him. So the Misha Stela is a great example of archaeology confirming what the Bible has given us. Another one, if we can go to the next one, it's called the Tel Dan Stela. Kings who have victories really like to brag about it and write it in stone, so everybody has to read about it hundreds of years later. This is another one. This is made by the king of Syria. And we think it was Haziel. We're not entirely sure because his name isn't on the part that we have. But this mentions him fighting against Israel and Judah. And it says, "I killed Jehoram, son of Ahab, king of Israel, and I killed Ahaziah, son of Jehoram, king of the house of David. And I set their towns into ruins and turned their land into desolation." So here's a king of Syria claiming that he killed this guy and this guy. Who did I just tell you killed this guy and this guy? Jehu. Right? But, if you remember, this guy was wounded in battle against the Syrians. He was fighting Haziel, this king of Syria, when he was wounded and went back home to recover and ends up dead. And as kings are wont to do, we have Haziel here taking credit for something he didn't necessarily really do himself. He wounded this guy, and he ended up being killed. He was fighting against this guy, and he ended up being killed. And so the king of Syria, even though Jehu is the one who did it, it shouldn't surprise us that Haziel would come in and make a little monument for himself that says, I did it, and claim that he killed both of these kings. But the fact, again, that we have these two names on the same piece of stone with the right family names and the right timing fighting against the right foreign nation, I mean, it's, again, it's a wonderful confirmation of what we have in the Word of God. Again and again, liberal scholars have said that, you know, that this stuff is all mythology, and if you go far enough back, it's all mythology. And we keep having to push that supposed mythological part of the Bible further back because we keep finding things that corroborate things that used to be considered myth. And so these are wonderful examples of some great factual things that are confirmed by archaeology. Okay, so to give you some sort of summary themes, if you haven't jotted anything down for Ahaziah or Jehoram, Ahaziah was evil. His reign was brief. He went out of his way to consult Baal instead of the Lord, and he died with no one to reign after him, no son to reign after him. Jehoram was kind of a half-heartedly repentant, afraid of the Lord's judgment kind of person. He got rid of Baal worship. He was willing to listen to the Lord, but only as long as it was convenient. And he ultimately suffered final judgment on Ahab's house. So to think about some takeaways for us, thinking about Ahaziah going out of his way, sending his servants miles and miles out of their way to go to a Philistine city to consult a false god, is such a picture of the way that we so often, we can go so out of our way to sin sometimes. And I don't know if you've had that experience of the Lord puts a couple roadblocks in your way, you're doing something you shouldn't, and he puts a couple roadblocks in your way that should stop you, and you keep going. And you know it's wrong, or you just don't care, and you keep going, and the Lord keeps, and you think about Ahaziah sending these captains of 50, and they're all getting killed, and he keeps sending them. And we can laugh, we almost laugh at that and say how foolish, but how often are we like that? There have been times when you know it's the wrong thing to do, and you keep going, and the Lord even gives you chances to stop, and you keep pushing through. And if when that's the case, come to the Lord for forgiveness, and he will change that heart that is so determined to sin against him, change it to be a heart that's determined to serve him, full of love and joy and peace and patience and all those things. Thinking some about Jehoram, though, it is interesting to consider the way that God restrains evil in this world through partial judgments that put the fear of God in the hearts of people who aren't even really saved. So you think about the consequences of sin that do happen in this world. You could think of sexual transmitted infections, or you think about aggressive nations getting hit by sanctions or things like that that make their lives painful. There are real life consequences for sin that will sometimes help restrain evil in this world, even if the person isn't saved, because they just don't want the discomfort that's involved in God's partial judgments on sin. And so he's an example of someone who backed off on the sin in that nation for his own reasons, to serve himself, but the Lord used it to restrain evil. And we can be thankful for that the Lord does work that way. But that should also make us stop and consider why we're serving the Lord. Do you serve the Lord because you're just afraid of him? You know, is the fear of hell the only thing that motivates you to come to Jesus Christ? Are you just afraid of what might happen to you? Or in this life even, are you afraid of the consequences of sin? Or do you really love the Lord? Do you want to come to him because he's good and because you love him? Because you can look more moral than other people, like Jehoram did compared to his family. You can look more moral in some ways just because you're afraid of God. But the fear of the Lord, true fear of the Lord, is not just being afraid of him. It's a respect for him, but also a love for him and a love for who Jesus is and what he did for us. And so I would say if you only know the fear of the Lord, only know the fear of God maybe, take some more time to consider what God has done to save his people. Just meditate on the cross. You know, a lot of people this week thinking through the week leading up to Jesus' death. And again, I don't think we have to celebrate church calendar or anything like that, but it's a time when people are thinking about that stuff more. You can think about, what did Jesus really go through that week? And see the love of God and love him for it. And don't just be afraid of him. Don't just serve him out of fear. That's Jehoram. That's Ahaziah and Jehoram of Israel. Next time we will hit the guys from Judah with the same names. Any questions? Ed.
Your summary there wraps up well with what you referred to. preaching on this morning, that the angel declaring there comes an end.
Yep.
And that time ends, there is not a chance.
Right. Yeah, that time for repenting comes to an end. And Jehoram's in a sad case where he experienced that final judgment on the house of Ahab when it all got wiped out. For all of his trying to not be quite so bad as his parents, he didn't really believe, didn't really trust, and he experienced that final judgment. So that's a hard lesson to learn. Yes?
How was their chariots in the sky?
Because they were angels' chariots, and angels' chariots can fly. Ours can't fly, but theirs can. So pretty amazing, isn't it? Yes, Jim.
He started talking about Joram sending the band that are possible to be slaughtered, and you know, these are not way to get roadblocks. Instantly, I thought of, you know, Apostle Paul on the road to Damascus, where the Lord asked him, you know, it's hard to kick against the goats, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. In fact, I had that verse in my notes, but I forgot to say it, that kicking against the goats. Yes.
And, you know, yep. Almost quintessential, the same. Until that moment.
Yep. Yeah, you've got that kicking against the goats picture of a
God's election.
Right, the animal's in some kind of a harness that's and a, it's moving yoke that's moving it this way, and it's still kicking against these sharp, you know, these goads that are meant to keep it going that way, but it's still going to kick against it sometimes. You know, that's the picture that Paul says, or God, Jesus says, it's hard for you to kick against the goats. Yeah, but that's what we do so often. All right, shall we? Oh, sorry, Ian, go ahead. The years for Jehoram were 852 to 841, roundabout, 852 to 841, yep. All right, let's go ahead and sing again here.